You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 602.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, hello, Cornflake.
Hi.
Look who's back, for real.
Yeah.
Cornflake is back thanks to our fill-in co-hosts, Kevin, the other Kevin, Kevin Cafferty, and the mayor of Chickentown. And then last week it was just me. I don't know if you heard, Cornflake, last week.
You didn't attempt your famous Cornflake impression, did you?
Last week I thought I'm just going to ramble on like a crazy person all by myself. But yikes, we missed you. Great to have Cornflake back. And you're not the only one who came back, because making a long-awaited return to the Flopcast after, yikes, it's been a few years, I think. Look who's here, the other half of the Sponge Awareness Foundation. It's Ed.
Hey, hi.
That was Ed playing the theme song live, by the way.
I thought it sounded a little different.
If the theme song sounded weird tonight, that was Ed on an actual piano playing live on the show.
It's a scary thing. That's a good thing I haven't played that in about 20 years.
Not a lot of live music on the Flopcast.
No, it's better that way, I think.
It's much better that way. We rarely break into song around here.
Kevin edits it out every time I try.
That is actually true. Yeah, once in a while, yes, it is. Like, we'll sing a little bit, and I just cut it right out.
Yep. It's all on the editing room floor.
Very, very true. But Ed is here as our special guest to celebrate the return of Cornflake, and we're going to have a good old-fashioned flop fight. But before we get to that, it's been missing from the last three episodes, so finally, Cornflake, how about National Whatever Day?
National Whatever Day!
So on the 22nd, the day before Thanksgiving, is National Jukebox Day.
Ah, okay.
And I was trying to figure out why National Jukebox Day is always the day before Thanksgiving. And I could not find any information online, but Kevin, I connected the dots.
Oh, explain this to us, please.
Well, do you know what the term juke means?
Nope. Ed, do you know?
Ed, do you know?
No, I'm trying to think. It maybe has something to do with the reunion, the concert that you go to just before Thanksgiving every year, Kevin.
The Letters to Cleo concert?
Yes, the Letters to Cleo concert.
Was that the first band to ever have a song played on a jukebox?
Let's say yes.
Jukebox was invented circa 1993, right?
You're close. It was in the 1920s. The term juke means to dance and act wildly. And so, I mean, think back to every time you've ever seen a turkey. Have you ever seen one that doesn't dance and act wildly?
Yeah, there's nothing weirder than a turkey. And they're always carrying a lot of loose change just in case they should happen upon the jukebox. They're popping those quarters in. They want to hear Wang Chung. Everybody knows that.
I think that's why National Jukebox Day is the day before Thanksgiving every year. Do you remember the first song you ever picked out on a jukebox? Like when you had a shiny quarter and you could just pop it in and pick whatever song you wanted?
I'm trying to remember. Ed, was there ever a Sponge Awareness song on a jukebox, to your knowledge?
Yes, but it was in North Korea.
Wow.
We were huge in Asia. That is true. Yeah, here in America, I don't think there's a jukebox to be found with one of our goofy little songs on it, unfortunately.
No. Fortunately.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I meant to say fortunately. Yes. What would you play, Cornflake, on the jukebox?
The very first, I remember the first song I picked. I picked Duble, Captain of Her Heart.
Oh, no.
At the pizza joint, I picked it because it was my mom's favorite song. I had no idea I was going to bring the entire atmosphere of the pizza parlor down.
I found that song disturbing back in the 80s. I found the piano very unsettling. Ed, can you play a little Captain of Her Heart by Duble for us?
No.
That's the correct answer. Thank you.
I think my first jukebox song must have been at a Papagino's, maybe at the one at the Lincoln Mall.
Yeah, they definitely had a jukebox at the the Lincoln Mall Papageno's. And that's why we will be there for Thanksgiving to celebrate Jukebox Day. You should all join us there. All right, happy Jukebox Day. Go play something weird.
The turkeys will appreciate it.
We're playing something very weird today, which is a flop fight. We haven't had a flop fight around here in quite a while, have we?
Oh, flop fights are perfect for the holidays.
Holidays are all about fighting.
That's right.
When was the last time we did a flop fight? I'm trying to remember. Oh, it was Maids and Butlers with Joe Crow.
Yes.
And that was back in the spring. That was like May.
That was memorable.
May and June, we did Maids and Butlers. That was good.
And it kept going and going as more and more Maids and Butlers kept getting added to the list.
Yeah, that's true. We spent about a month of follow-up. And this was Ed's idea. Ed, you brought us this idea for a flop fight.
Just a moment of inspiration. Just pure inspiration.
Ed's idea was game shows. We're talking game shows tonight. So that's game show hosts and perhaps some game show related characters and whatnot. We're trying to mix it up a little bit. So I've got the list here. Ed and I were working on preparing a list for the game show flop fight. And I did my best to diversify the list because you talk like classic game show hosts and it's just a big pile of old white guys.
Yep.
So I really tried to mix it up a little bit and I think we have done so. We're not going to cover everybody. You know, there's so many game shows, there's so many game show hosts, and we only have so much time. So only so many slots are available in a flop fight. And so one of the ground rules I set as I was arranging the participants was one entry per show. So any particular game show is only going to have one representative in the tournament, but we can bring in any supporting characters who may be able to assist them as they go through the flop fight, you know. And as an example, let's say Howie Mandel, because Howie Mandel hosted, what was that stupid show he did? Deal or No Deal?
Deal or No Deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I even saw it. It seemed so stupid to me. I never saw it. Did you guys see Deal or No Deal?
Yeah, I did. I did watch it occasionally, and it was as stupid as you would think, but yet so compelling. Was
it compelling?
Yeah, it was weird.
I never even gave it a chance to compel me. But so Howie is not in the competition, but let's say he was, just as an example. If we were to draw Howie Mandel, you could bring in the girls opening suitcases, you know, they could play as well.
All right, so we're down with collabs.
We could bring in the cast of Saint Elsewhere if Howie Mandel was in this. All are welcome here at the
Thanksgiving flopcast table of
yes,
fighting.
Yes.
Oh, is that so? How many British game shows are in this?
Oh, good question. I'm going to say approximately zero. So this is a tournament. We're going to pair them off and discuss and debate how they will do battle. And of course, because it's a flop fight, it's also going to be a different type of battle for each matchup. And that's where things get super weird. Also, Ed was nice enough to provide me some suggested competitions for the flop fight. And to save myself a heap of trouble, I just used all of them. So Ed has provided the competitions tonight.
Well, I cannot wait to hear what you came up with, Ed.
There may be some repeats, because I'm not as...
Some of these we may have done before, but that's fine. All right, so I've got all the contestants are on little slips of paper, and those slips of paper are in coffee mugs, and I'm going to reach in and draw out randomly each participant.
Please do not accidentally dip your fingers in your coffee.
That's the fun part, is I actually have three coffee mugs. Two of them have slips of paper, one of them has coffee. I'm never quite sure which one I'm reaching into. And in this mug, the first contestant I have drawn, well, this is appropriate because this is a classic game show host. We have drawn from Let's Make a Deal, Monty Hall.
Ooh, going in strong.
Yeah.
Did anybody like Let's Make a Deal?
No.
Not particularly.
No. It seems so stupid. I never watched very much Let's Make a Deal. I'd flip by it and say, huh, look at that. That looks dumb.
Whenever I used to try to bargain with my parents for extra dessert or stay up late, they would call me Monty Hall.
Oh, nice.
Let's make a deal. I hated that.
What a sarcastic household you were in.
You don't even know.
But yeah, it was the stupid little games and making people pick you know, door one or door two and get a stupid prize. And there's some math involved, you know, the Monty Hall problem.
I know Monty Hall has lots of problems, but I'm not quite sure which one you're referring to.
It's the statistics about whether or not if you were to change the algorithm midstream, whether or not it changes the whether you should pick or stay.
Right. Yeah. The classic Monty Hall problem is you pick door one, two, or three. Let's say the person picks door number one. Then Monty would say, okay, let's see what's behind door number two. And they open door number two, and it's something stupid. It's a goat. You're either going to win a new car or a goat. There's a goat behind two doors. There's a new car behind one. Now, Cornflake, I know you'd prefer the goat, so you're going to win either way. Most people are...
I need more goats for my goat yoga studio.
Most people are trying to avoid the goat. So the player picks door number one. Monty Hall says, let's look behind door number two. There's a goat. Then Monty says, do you want to stick with door number one or do you want to switch to door number three? Now, here's where people get confused over the Monty Hall problem. People think it doesn't matter. It's a 50-50 choice. Doesn't matter if you stick or if you switch. And that is incorrect. That's the Monty Hall problem. You're actually better off switching to door number three. You're doubling your chances of winning the car if you switch to door number three. But people have trouble working that through logistically. That's the Monty Hall problem. And that's a problem we're going to solve here tonight on the Flopcast. The other thing about the show was that this was everybody was in wacky costumes. Remember?
Yeah, I have a problem with that.
I think I might have blacked that part
the
out.
The whole studio audience of Let's Make a Deal. Monty would go up into the audience to select people to play, and everybody was wearing goofy costumes.
Can you imagine if I were there in my Yip Yip costume?
Well, you know, I was thinking about this. This is one of those things where I learned something about Let's Make a Deal not long ago. I feel like just within the last few years, I learned about those costumes. And it was one of those moments where I thought, oh, of course. So let's say Cornflake shows up to be in the audience for Let's Make a Deal. If you're wearing your Yip Yip costume, they wouldn't let you do that, you know, because Sesame Street owns the Yip Yips.
Oh.
That's a character that they can't just use on a deal. What I learned is those people didn't just show up to the studio wearing their own goofy costumes from home. Let's Make a Deal was providing all those costumes to the whole audience.
Wow, that is a Herculean effort.
Yeah, but when I thought about it, I was like, oh, of course they were providing those stupid costumes. It makes so much sense when you think about it. It never even occurred to me, but yeah, it's all fake.
Just like everything else on TV.
Yes. Anyway, Monty Hall from Let's Make a Deal, a show that none of us like, is our first contestant. I'm going to reach back into the mug and let's see who is facing Monty Hall.
You know, that same thing happens every day. I show up at work and we're all assigned costumes for the day.
Oh, yeah. What do they put you in?
Mostly I get dressed as a zebra.
A zebra. Interesting. Mostly.
Mostly.
Once in a while.
Every once in a while, they let me dress up as an alien. Okay.
But not a Yip Yip.
No.
Because that's copyright protected.
Generic alien.
I have drawn Remote Control, as in the MTV game show Remote Control. The whole cast of Remote Control. We're just going to lump everybody in together. Now, this is a show that I liked.
This is a show I have never seen. There was no MTV in my house, so... I gotta say, I'm gonna have to sit this one out and cheer everybody on.
Oh, there was no MTV in my house either, Ed, so I feel for you. I used to watch it at the babysitter's house.
Yeah, this was MTV's kind of TV-themed game show of the late 80s, hosted by Ken Ober. And a bunch of people got famous out of this. Like, the announcer sidekick was Colin Quinn, you know, who went on to Saturday Night Live after this. Adam Sandler, a very young Adam Sandler, was also a regular on Remote Control, and Dennis Leary. So a bunch of comedians came out of the show. Then there was the girl, Kari. Well, first it was Marisol, then it was Kari, then there were a couple other girls after that. So a big wacky crew and a very, very funny show. Funnier than you'd expect it to be.
It's quality.
Yeah, the categories would be stuff like Brady Physics, and they'd ask a physics question, but it would somehow involve the Brady Bunch.
Like how the cards would fall.
Yes, yeah, the House of Cards. How does that work from a physics perspective?
Gotcha.
They had a category called Inside Tina, as in Inside Tina Yothers, the girl from Family Ties. And it would be an anatomy question, a biology question, but specifically about Tina Yothers. It was very, very silly. They did a category called Dead or Alive, and it was just the host, Ken, would just yell out a celebrity's name, and you just had to say if they were dead or alive.
And back then, they couldn't listen to the Flopcast Death Show and know for
sure. So nobody knew what was going on. And then eventually, they got bored with that, so they changed it to Dead or Canadian. And Ken would say, sometimes it's hard to tell the difference. That was a fun show, Remote Control, and just a wacky bunch of weird people. They're going to face Monty Hall. So this is Monty, and let's lump in Monty and all the wacky costumed characters, the whole crazy studio audience.
Yeah, that feels a little more balanced.
Yeah, this is Monty, and let's say it's, you know, people in chicken suits and whatever all around him versus the cast of Remote Control. Now the question is, what are they doing? What's the competition? I'm reaching into the second coffee mug. And the competition, again, Ed provided all these all these competitions. The first competition I have drawn is NFL referee. You are the referee of a professional football game. Who would be better at that, Monty Hall or those crazy kids on Remote Control? Let's think this through.
Well, we now have a Monty Hall problem.
It's not the Monty Hall problem. I mean, football can get rather complicated, though. The referee has a lot to sort out sometimes. You got to know a lot of rules. It's very dangerous out there. There's giant people smashing into each other all around you.
Just like the set of Let's Make a Deal.
Yeah, a lot of people wearing big, bulky uniforms on both Let's Make a Deal and on a football field. Those remote control guys,
they'd be way more fun.
They'd be fun? I guess it depends on, do we just want to see something crazy happen on the football field, or are we looking for actual sound decision-making?
Yes, please, on the crazy. I'd watch football if there was crazy.
You want to see Adam Sandler and Colin Quinn running around a football field?
I do. I really do. But I have a feeling I'm in the minority.
I think you'd be on the minority on that one.
It's going to be pretty wacky with Monty Hall showing up as well, because he's going to have all those goats are going to come along, plus the people in chicken suits.
Well, in New England, we'd have the goat anyway, so there we go.
So it's going to be a scene either way.
Is the touchdown behind door number one?
Cornflake, it sounds like you're leaning towards remote control. Ed, what do you think?
I kind of like the thought of Monty Hall, just because, you know, he's level-headed. He has to make those decisions of, okay, on the fly. Okay, he picked door number one. I know the goats are on one and three, so I have to make – so he's got to make those decisions and try to steer and yet be fair.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and, you know, he wants to give away the prize, but at the same time he doesn't, right? So he's got to try to stay neutral. Whereas opposed to remote control, you know, Adam Sandler and those guys trying to make a decision about, was it in the uprights or, you know, was the foot over the line or what? Nah, it's just going to be a disaster.
It just changed the channel.
All right. Would you go along with that, Cornflake? Should we just go with the logic of putting Monty Hall seems much closer to a responsible adult than anybody else involved in remote control.
Well, if you wanted a sensible answer, I don't know why you asked me.
Normally we frown upon sensible things around here, but in this case, fine.
We flop fight serious, though.
And again, this is an example of how you never know what's going to happen around here in a flop fight, because if you ask me which show would I rather watch, I'm all in on remote control. But Monty Hall wins.
I just want to see football players pitched backward in recliners.
Oh, yeah.
And into the wall.
Would send people flying in their chairs on remote control. That's right. We've played remote control on the Classics track a couple of times. Dragon Con Classics track.
I've played that. That was fun.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're on our way. Monty Hall advances. Our next opening matchup will be, I've drawn Regis Philbin from Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
That is a very tan man.
Is Regis tan? I never noticed.
Oh, yeah. He was always that perfect shade of tan.
Okay. Did you watch this show? I saw a little bit of this one.
Yeah, just a little when it was new.
It was a huge hit. They put it on like every night for a while. They canceled all their other shows. And they were like, from now on, every night, it's just Regis hosting a game show.
Yeah, it was a cultural phenomenon for that, you know, 2 years or whatever it was. Kind of like, you know, with the let's make a deal thing. It just kind of came in and it, you know, took over for a little while, then it fizzled out.
Oh, yeah. Who can forget when we were a nation obsessed with let's make a deal? I remember that. And it happened again with Regis in Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. But Regis was a big star before that, of course, with all his various talk shows over the years. And we always enjoyed seeing him on Letterman. He was a very, very funny guest on Letterman. Seemed like a good guy, entertaining dude.
Big heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just one of those born old-timey entertainers. Regis Philbin, he's going to flop fight. Let's see who Regis is facing. I have drawn... This is one that Ed suggested, and I would have forgotten all about this guy, and what a huge oversight that would have been. I've drawn from Sesame Street, Guy Smiley.
Yes! Ed, thank you for making sure Guy Smiley didn't get overlooked.
Oh, you know, it was my pleasure to bring Guy into the conversation. You know, he is America's most beloved game show host.
He is.
I looked up Guy Smiley today because I couldn't quite remember. I remembered Guy Smiley and what he looked like and hearing that voice and that he was the game show host on Sesame Street. But then I was like, what did he actually do? I couldn't remember. And if you Wikipedia Guy Smiley, the list goes on and on and on. They did so many game shows with Guy Smiley. It just goes on forever. Like, they parodied every other game show. I remember the one, it was like, This Is Your Life.
Yeah, with Prairie Dawn playing the piano, right?
They'd be doing like a loaf of bread.
Yeah.
I remember that one. But he did a million things. And that was Jim Henson doing the voice originally. So Regis has some tough competition here, because obviously we are fans. I'm fans of both of these gentlemen. Let's see what's going to happen, though.
Well, you know, this could get interesting, because with Guy Smiley, by your rules, we can bring in any of the Muppets.
We absolutely could, yeah. Somebody could step in with an assist as needed, if it seems appropriate.
And Regis gets Kathy Lee, I guess.
That's right. Who's going to help Regis except Kathy Lee?
Oh, man. Please let the competition be counting things.
The competition is... Okay, Ed, when you submitted this, you said just boxing, like a boxing match. I did elaborate on this one. I changed that to boxing a kangaroo.
Nice.
Yeah. Regis Philbin, Guy Smiley. Was there ever a kangaroo on Sesame Street? There must have been.
I don't recall.
There must have been a kangaroo on Sesame Street at some point, either a cartoon or the video from the zoo.
Big Bird's kangaroo-shaped.
Yeah, but he's more of a bird.
Maybe Snuffy's part kangaroo. Snuffle up, I guess.
Possibly. I'm sure there was a kangaroo on Sesame Street, but I'm also sure it did not do battle with Guy Smiley. Regis, I'm sure, has tangled with a kangaroo at some point. He seems like the kind of guy that would really mix it up and, you know, get into an argument and it would come to blows versus some drunken marsupial late one night in New York City.
I have my concerns about Guy Smiley on this one.
Oh, I feel differently. I feel like Guy Smiley would just call in the Muppets and they just swarm the kangaroo.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, if it were just up to Guy Smiley, I've seen what his arms look like when they wave around and no contest.
Which Sesame Street Muppets would you bring in specifically to back you up in a fight with a kangaroo?
Well, you got to go big. So you bring in, you know, Snuffleup, I guess. You'll bring in Big Bird. No, those are two power moves.
Yeah, those guys aren't really fighters, though.
Two-headed monster.
Yes. Two-headed guy would help. Yeah, yeah, the bearded, two-headed horned monster, that purple thing, sure.
They're angry all the time.
Yeah, that's a good call. Guy Smiley, I don't know if they ever appeared together on screen, but let's say Guy Smiley has their number and could bring in the two-headed monster.
And Animal.
Animal from the Muppets. Now, well, now we're crossing over from Sesame Street to the Muppet Show. I don't know if Guy Smiley would have that kind of direct contact with Animal, but possibly.
I think he'd do fine with the two-headed monster.
Two-headed monster is solid. That's good backup in a fight. I like that.
Yeah, and you know, when I think of Regis in his game show era, he was elderly at this point.
Right.
So it's been like a young Regis who might have had a fighting chance, yeah. So to speak.
A young Regis, sure. I'm sure got into some scrapes with kangaroos all the time. But this is elderly Who Wants to Be a Millionaire era Regis just getting beaten to within an inch of his life by a kangaroo. Guy Smiley, it also occurs to me, as a Muppet, he's little, he's kind of floppy, malleable. if he needed to, he could just dive right into the pouch.
Yes.
You know, then what's the kangaroo going to do?
Punch itself.
Just punch itself? Yeah. So that's a solid defense, I would say, for a Muppet versus a kangaroo. I think that would work. It sounds like we're going Guy Smiley.
And the pouch itself is would be very familiar to a Muppet, you know, as a puppet contraption, right? So
how so?
You know, fitting into, you know, trying to get into a small space and, you know, maneuver around. That's what Muppets and puppets have to do, right?
Is that what they do? I don't know.
It's on the job description. Look it up.
I didn't know the Muppets were hiding in small spaces. I guess when they get packed up for the night. It sounds like we're going Guy Smiley, and I think that's a solid pick. So sorry, Regis. Regis is out. Next we have... okay, this is more getting back to the classic game show hosts now. Here's Jeopardy's Alex Trebek.
Ooh, he's tough.
Is he tough?
He is tough. I heard an interview with him a few years ago.
And he announced that he wants to box a kangaroo?
Yes. If he had been in the last competition, he would have been boxing kangaroo. No, he takes no nonsense.
Do you prefer Trebek with or without the mustache?
With.
With, okay, yeah. That's kind of the classic look.
Like a little bit of an homage to Magnum P.I.
And now there have been other Jeopardy hosts, of course, pre-Alex Trebek. It was Art Fleming. That's the name that Weird Al sings in Weird Al's Jeopardy song, because the Weird Al did that song before, right before the Alex Trebek era started. And now we're in the post-Trebek era, where they've got Blossom, right? She hosts it now?
Yeah, Mayim Bialik.
Yeah, plus the smart dude that was like a Jeopardy champion.
Ken Jennings.
He also hosts it now. There's like 18 people hosting it now, I think. I have not seen any of this. I have not watched a single episode of Jeopardy in, I'm going to say, 20 years.
I watched it relatively recently when I was visiting my parents because, of course, that's what, you know, old people do as well.
That's what you do. Who was hosting
that's
it?
What you do.
When you saw it, was it Blossom who was hosting?
No, it was Jennings. Ken Jennings.
Ken Jennings.
Good job.
Was he good?
Yeah.
All right. Seems like a sharp guy. But he's no Trebek.
No.
We're going classic Jeopardy host Alex Trebek will be facing, from Press Your Luck, the Whammies. This is a tough matchup.
I have a question.
Yes.
Can Alex Trebek bring in Saturday Night Celebrity Jeopardy spoof Alex Trebek?
The Will Ferrell?
Yes.
Alex Trebek parody character? I don't see why not.
Sweet.
But the Whammies. So Press Your Luck, that was a goofy, fun 80s game show, and it was just all about the Whammies. You're just waiting for those little cartoon Whammies to come out on the screen and do something goofy. The greatest Whammy of all, of course, being the breakdancing Whammy.
Yes.
Because this was the mid-80s. Savage Steve Holland, the director, the guy that made Better Off Dead and One Crazy Summer. He was also an animator, and that was the guy that created the Whammies. And they were great. America loved the Whammies.
I loved the Whammies.
Nobody even remembers the host of Press Your Luck. Could you name the host of Press Your Luck right now?
No.
I can, but you know, I have a lot of problems. Peter Tamarkin was the host of Press Your Luck, but again, who cares? It's all about the Whammies. They were freaky and weird. We love them. They're about to fight Alex Trebek from Jeopardy. What are they doing? The competition this time will be NASCAR race driver.
Oh, boy.
Alex Trebek, Whammy, racing a car.
Does the car have to stay intact?
Absolutely not.
Well, then I know what my answer is.
Yeah, I feel like if I see a Whammy driving a car, you know that's not going to end well. It's going to smash into a wacky cartoon explosion, and America would expect nothing less. Now, how's Alex Trebek going to fare behind the wheel of a race car? He seems like a guy who could drive.
Yeah, competently, I think.
Competent. Seems like a competent guy.
Ooh, I might have to think back, and we might need to check our references on this, but I think I read somewhere that he was injured in a car accident because he fell asleep at the wheel sometime.
Oh, no. This is unconfirmed. This could just be Ed spreading crazy rumors about the late, great Alex Trebek.
I recall reading that about a game show host in doing research for the show, and I think it was Alex.
It was either Alex Trebek or Peter Tamarkin from Press Your Luck. We're not sure. But certainly gives the edge to the whammies, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, the whammies would drive it like they stole it.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to smash it. That's a given.
But that's what we're tuning in for. We're bad, bad NASCAR friends.
The whammy would be wide awake the whole time as it destroys a car for your amusement. That would be so fun. I think we got to go whammies.
I like it.
Okay, the whammies are advancing. Let's go. We've got one more opening matchup this week. Starting with, oh, here we go. From Wheel of Fortune, America's sweetheart, we've drawn letter-turning expert Vanna White.
Yay. I was hoping she'd come up.
Everybody loves Vanna White. We grew up with Vanna White. She's still doing it.
Yeah. It seems that Ryan Seacrest is taking over for Pat Sajak, but Vanna's going nowhere. She's still in the show.
Okay. I looked up Vanna White earlier today. Vanna got that job in 1982. She's been turning letters, or at least tapping letters, on Wheel of Fortune for, 41 years now, and counting.
That is so impressive.
The funny thing about her is she actually appeared on The Price is Right as a contestant before she became on Wheel of Fortune.
Oh,
she
was
just picked out of the audience one time, and there she was, clearly, Vanna. She didn't make it on stage, but...
Oh, that's cool. So she was kicking around, looking to break into game shows one way or another.
I love that that's her origin story.
She was at Let's Make a Deal every week, wearing a hot dog costume. Nothing quite clicked until one day, turning letters. That's her thing. And I know we've talked about Vanna White here on the Flopcast before.
Yeah, I think she was a celebrity for a National Whatever Day or something.
That could have been something like that. I know it's come up, and it's come up that... At some point, they changed the set, and they made it. She doesn't turn the letters anymore. Now she just
taps them.
The letters magically appear when she taps it. And again, this is one of those things where, like, when was the last time I watched Wheel of Fortune? I'm going to say 1987.
Same.
Yeah, I watched it with my parents before I came on with Jeopardy that night.
Nice. So you're way more current on these shows than us.
My grandma used to watch it. She also had the little handheld version of the game.
Like an electronic game?
Electronic Wheel of Fortune.
Okay. Is there like a little tiny Muppet Vanna White that comes along with it?
We're going to say yes.
Yes, there was, of course.
How could there not be?
She wouldn't let me play with it, so I don't know.
I remember when we were in high school, Ed, and it was the big scandal that Vanna White was in Playboy. Remember that?
I do remember that.
People were freaking out because we had that social studies class where we'd read Newsweek magazine as a class every week.
Yes, yes, yes.
And there was a little picture of the Playboy cover with Vanna White on the cover in the Newsweek. And she's like half naked right on the cover of Playboy. It was scandalous. And, you know, what's the big deal? Let Vanna do whatever she wants.
I dare say naked people can turn letters just as well as clothed people.
Yeah.
Come on. Less likely to get caught on something if you're not wearing anything.
Vanna shouldn't have to wear anything to go on Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, I didn't realize that was the argument I was making.
It sounded like you're arguing for naked Wheel of Fortune conflict.
I guess now I am.
This is what you've been dreaming of all this time. It's all coming out now. All right, Cornflake wants Vanna White to make a few more changes to Wheel of Fortune. Started with just tapping letters. Now it's going to get... Things are going to get even looser over there. But meanwhile, Vanna's got to do battle with our final contestant for this week. And that is from Tic-Tac-Doe. It's Wink Martindale.
We've had ourselves some good Wink talk on this show.
Have we talked about Wink? I don't remember.
Yes, we have.
Why did we talk about Wink Martindale?
Why wouldn't we talk about Wink Martindale?
You know what? Good point. I watched so much Tic-Tac-Doe when I was a little kid. Every night, we'd have Family Feud and Tic-Tac-Doe.
This is the one with the dragon, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's the big Tic-Tac-Toe screen, and you're answering questions and getting your X's and O's. And then the bonus round, you're just picking those Tic-Tac-Toe spots at random, trying to avoid the dragon. Yes. What was up with that dragon?
I don't know. I think they kept the dragon up too late for the recordings or something.
It's such a bizarre element to this show to suddenly out of nowhere, there's a dragon.
And somehow whammies are normal?
The whammies made perfect sense in the context of Press Your Luck. That dragon just came out of nowhere on Tic-Tac-Toe. I loved it, don't get me wrong. And it's all run by Wink Martindale. Wink Martindale had a hit song in the 50s, I think, maybe early 60s, late 50s, something like that. But like, he wasn't singing, he was talking. It was like patriotic music is playing, and he tells a story about a guy with a deck of cards. I may have just made this up in my head, but somewhere deep in my memory, Wink Martindale has a hit song talking about a guy with a deck of cards. Look that up, everybody.
I'm convinced.
And enjoy. And he's still out there. He must be like 127 years old. But Wink Martindale lives on, and he's been saying for years he just wants to get in a fight with Vanna White.
Oh, here we go.
Well, hold on to your dentures, Wink Martindale, yeah. Because I think Vanna has a fighting chance here.
That time has come. What are they doing? Let's draw the next competition, as provided by Ed. This one is, well, you know this one came from Ed. This is train conductor or train engineer. I don't even know the difference.
I see what you did there, Ed.
Ed, if you can keep this to 45 minutes or less, what's the difference between a train conductor and a train engineer?
The conductor is the person who is in charge of the overall train, but the engineer is the person who actually drives it.
All right. What about the guy coming down the aisle, checking your ticket?
So that would typically be the conductor. He's in charge of the overall train, make sure it runs on time, goes to the stops in the right places, all that sort of stuff. And then the engineer is just in charge of following the conductor's orders. Stop at this station, go to this other.
So the conductor outranks the engineer?
Yes.
And yet the conductor is the guy going up and down the aisle, checking everybody's tickets?
Yep.
See, that seems like a you know what I mean? That seems like a more menial task than driving the train.
Yeah, but a conductor has the authority to throw somebody off and has to collect money and all of that stuff.
He's like Wink Martindale. He's just looking for a fight. He's looking for an excuse to just grab a guy and toss him right out the door off the train. Okay, good point. This is Vanna versus Wink. Who's the better train conductor or train engineer?
That's the matchup of the century right there.
This is tough.
So Vanna's good with spelling, with words, with phrases, whereas Wink, he's sharper on tic-tac-toe, trivia questions, and dragons.
You know, I feel that Wink would make a better locomotive engineer, and I think Vanna would make a better conductor.
Interesting.
Which makes it very difficult, given the way that the question is phrased.
If only they would work together, but no.
This is a flop fight.
Here they are fighting for no reason. This train would be running so smoothly if they would just work together.
No, but things are going to go off the tracks.
Oh, yeah, they are.
So Vanna, just by, you know, she's good at, has to look down this long corridor and be able to figure out, okay, which letter has got to go in the right spot and press, you know, tap or turn or whatever. She's got to know that puzzle. It's like keeping track of a timetable.
Sure.
You know, she's got to know that puzzle and have to be able to figure out, okay, they picked an A. That means it's going to come up in this spot. That's actually a lot of work there that would mimic what a conductor has to do in keeping track of timetables and scheduling and what station this person has to get off at. And, you know, and freight car management, same concept. So since a conductor outranks engineer, and Vanna would be a better conductor, my recommendation, and I am wearing my conductor's hat right now on this audio podcast. I tip my hat to everybody. I have to make my professional recommendation that we would go with Vanna White as conductor.
We should remind listeners that Ed actually does work with trains. And it's been a few years, but Ed actually joined us for 2 train-themed Flopcast episodes a few years back. So, yeah, Ed is certainly the expert. So I'm perfectly happy deferring to that decision. Cornflake, you good?
No one denies Vanna's organizational capabilities.
Yeah, okay. Wink Martindale is out. Vanna advances.
Wink is out in a blink.
And just as a warning, your train conductor just might be naked. You never know.
That'll get people on the train on time in the morning.
Those were the opening rounds, which means we're going to the next round now. So this is all reruns at this point, but let's pick up with our winners from the opening rounds, and that means it's going to be Monty Hall from Let's Make a Deal versus Guy Smiley from Sesame Street. The competition is Marathon Runner.
Oh, yes.
Kevin, this one's yours.
That's true. Ed's the train expert. I did run a marathon earlier this year. I'm trying to remember if there were any Muppets competing along the course.
No offense, but they would have been way ahead of you.
They probably would have. There were a lot of people ahead of me, and several of them easily could have been puppets, yes.
Would a Muppet get lost if they didn't know how to get to Sesame Street? They would be constantly asking, how do you get to Sesame Street?
That's what the court marshals are for. Oh, I keep calling them court marshals. That's what the course marshals are for.
You just want everybody at the marathon to be arrested. I know you.
But not the Sesame Street characters.
I've got to say, Guy Smiley seems a lot more animated and energetic than Monty Hall. Monty would just, he'd climb up the aisle into the audience, surrounded by the crazy costume people, and he's just standing there.
So he shows us at least that he can handle elevation, but...
That's right. He can make it up the aisle. Guy Smiley is just...
nonstop.
I think Guy really does have this. I mean, he's just going to crush it.
Despite not having legs.
There is that, though.
Kevin,
there
what are you trying that. To say?
I somehow have more confidence in Guy Smiley running a marathon than Monty Hall. All right, we're going to give this to Guy Smiley.
I think there was a version of Guy Smiley where he does appear with legs.
Oh, really?
I think the recesses of my brain.
That was in that same issue of Playboy that Vanna was in. I remember that. That was
Guy Smiley was showing some legs.
That was scandalous. Our next round is, speaking of Vanna, it's Vanna versus the Whammy.
Oh, man.
Ed, remember that time we went into Blockbuster and we tried to rent Vanna versus the Whammy and they wouldn't let us?
No, it was because of that whole scandal thing.
It was very scandalous. I have drawn for the competition. It's Vanna White, it's the Whammies, and the competition is Chicken Farmer. Is this you have a farm with chickens on it, or you are a chicken who runs a farm?
Ooh, I hadn't considered the latter option.
Because I've seen both.
Well, yes.
I really have. We were up in Vermont once. Steve and I were driving through Vermont. We stopped at what looked like a farm stand, and there was a fenced-in area with a million chickens behind it. But then on the other side of the fence where we were, and where there was a little building, you know, with vegetables for sale and stuff, not a human being to be seen. There were no people there. And then a chicken came walking up to us outside the fence.
Oh, wow.
The chicken seemed to be in charge of the whole place.
So let's say, yes, that is the farm, and that is the chicken, and Vanna or the Whammy have to be that chicken.
The competition is you're a chicken running a farm. How would a Whammy do running a farm and or being a chicken?
I think a Whammy is more likely to dress up like a chicken.
Yeah.
Than Vanna White.
I could certainly see a wacky Whammy cartoon on Press Your Luck involving a Whammy in a chicken suit. Vanna...
I just feel that the whole thing would be beneath Vanna. It would, she's like, I'm done with this.
She seemed like more of a big city girl.
Yeah.
No, wasn't she from Georgia or something like that originally?
I don't know.
I think she was a Southern girl. So now that changes everything.
We can't keep Vanna down on the farm.
Maybe. In her spare time, she lives in the chicken topiary.
Yes, with Topiary Joe.
My mistake then. If Vanna was a country girl, she could be perfectly comfortable being a chicken, running a chicken farm.
But when you've got a gig like Wheel of Fortune, would you?
There is that. The Whammies seem to be up for anything.
I think the Whammies would make better chickens, but Vanna would be a better chicken farmer.
I shudder to think of what would happen to the farm if the Whammies were running it.
Oh, it'd be a disaster, just like their failed NASCAR experience.
It's a little more fun to watch a car crash than it is to watch chickens crash.
Sounds like Cornflake, you're leaning towards Vanna. Ed, what do you think?
I'm leaning Vanna now. I really am.
If you two are good with Vanna being a chicken, running a chicken farm...
Who are you to stop us?
Right. That's fine. That's just fine.
I appreciate it.
All right. Is everybody going to be naked on the chicken farm, just like on the train?
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay, your chicken farmer is Vanna White. That means our final competition for this week will be Vanna White versus Guy Smiley.
This is the matchup of the century.
Wow. So it all comes down to the competition, which is... this is one that's very appropriate for Cornflake. But again, this came from Ed. The competition is building a lobster trap tree.
Now I'm really glad that the whammies are not in the running for this.
Yeah, it would have been all over. The whammies and the traps are in the bay.
There'd still be lobsters in them.
The lobsters are running free.
The whammies would have ruined Christmas. So the trap tree, to bring everybody up to speed, is up in Maine and thereabouts on the coast. People will take lobster traps and build a giant tree-shaped pile of lobster traps and then decorate it with lights and decorations like a Christmas tree. It's the trap tree, and Cornflake likes to go visit the trap tree every year.
It's not Christmas without the trap tree.
I saw my first trap tree just this weekend. What? Somebody was setting one up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Getting in early with the trap trees.
I saw Where the Trap Tree Goes once, remember?
Yes, I brought you to where the trap tree would be if it was the holidays.
Yeah, you took me to lunch. We went up to Maine. We had lunch. And then you said, by the way, see that empty patch of land right off to the side? That's where they put the trap tree. It was very exciting. Guy Smiley, Vanna White, building a lobster trap Christmas tree. I mean, Vanna's good with things that light up.
It's true.
There is that.
But I've seen more Sesame Street Christmas specials than I've seen Wheel of Fortune Christmas specials.
I'm sure they exist. There must be a Wheel of Fortune Christmas special out there somewhere.
But I've never been sad enough to watch it.
When they did the Sesame Street Christmas shows, I don't think Guy Smiley was on them, was he?
I couldn't tell you.
I don't think they let Guy Smiley participate in the Christmas shows. And now I'm angry about that.
Wait.
What, is he Jewish?
So there was Muppet Family Christmas,
yeah,
which included the Sesame Street gang, and I think Guy Smiley was in that.
A lot of Muppets are in that one. Yeah, from The Muppet Show and from Fraggle Rock and from Sesame Street. But Guy Smiley, was Guy Smiley there?
I think he was.
Okay.
I watch it every year. I should know this.
I will have to watch for Guy Smiley this year. I hope he's in there.
I just picture the Muppets coming in. Okay, we're going to set up this trap tree. And the sappy music starts. And they start figuring out. And then chaos ensues. And, you know, Kermit has to take charge. And you know, the thing almost ends up in the ocean. And then finally, all of a sudden, a Christmas miracle occurs. And it lights up. And it's beautiful. And there's Gonzo at the top. I mean, it works, right?
Yeah, they could easily get a whole Muppet Christmas special out of building a trap tree.
Yes.
Right. Vanna White, it would just be like, okay, put it together. Press the letter that says on and it lights up. Okay.
Vanna's all business.
That's so exciting.
She'd have to go to each individual trap and tap it to get it to light up.
Oh, like Q-Bert.
Yeah, do you think Vanna would be like, somebody else build the whole thing. Just let me know when it's ready to turn the lights on.
Yep.
That's my thing.
I think this one's going to go to Guy and the Muppets.
Wow. This is a tough, tough matchup. It sounds like we're going Guy Smiley. Sorry, Vanna. Wow. Okay. Vanna is out, which means Guy Smiley from Sesame Street is going to compete in Flop Fight Part 2, the final round, because we're 8 more players are going to emerge in our next show.
He beat all the humans.
But for this week, that's your winner, Guy Smiley. Is everybody excited?
I can't contain myself.
Yes.
I can tell. All right, this has gone on long enough. So let's, you know what? Let's wrap this up, Cornflake.
I can't promise you I remember how to do this, but I'm going to try.
It's been a long time.
Has been a while. I want everyone to know you can find us between shows at flopcast.net. We're also at facebook.com/flopcast. We're on Mastodon, universodon.com/@flopcast. And we're on Instagram. The_flopcast is our handle. Please go on over to Apple Podcasts. leave us ratings and or reviews there. Music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Not quite sure who that is.
Neither do I.
Never heard of him. Cornflake, welcome back. Everybody missed Cornflake out there, believe me.
Oh, what a great welcome to come back to you guys. Thank you, Kevin and Ed.
And thanks for all the cards and letters that have been pouring in from the listeners. we did hear from some people who were eagerly awaiting your return, which was very nice.
Kevin?
Yes?
It wasn't so much that we missed Cornflake. It was just that dreadful show that you did the week before.
The one with just me.
Yeah.
That's when we realized this is really a problem. We really need Cornflake back. People like hearing Cornflake on the show and grudgingly tolerate me. We have a formula, and we should stick to it. Anyway, thanks, Ed, for stepping up for some flop fighting. Good to have Ed back on the show.
Oh, this was fun.
We're going to wrap this up with a flop fight part two, so stick around for that. Everybody, meanwhile, please be safe, be kind, be silly, and we'll see you next week.
Peace and whammies.
What's new on the 42 cast? Let's ask my co-hosts.
We're talking about Doctor Who,
comic book shows and movies,
and we're talking about all things Star Trek.
And so much more.
Check us out on Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes.
It's only on the 42 cast, your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything.
So Nathan, when are we finally talking Babylon 5?
Hey, it's the secret after show. Ed is still here. Cornflake is still here. It's your first after show in a few weeks as well.
I made it. I'm so glad to be here.
You know, what we didn't mention before during the regular show is I actually got together with Ed in person. You know, we're on Zoom right now, of course, but just a few weeks ago, Ed and I got together for the first time in years.
Well, the court order finally expired.
That's right. The restraining order is up. You got to renew that thing, man, because as soon as it was up, there I was. This was an actual in-person reunion of the Sponge Awareness Foundation, although we were not performing, thankfully. But we got together and for an evening at the theater. Remember?
It was lovely. It was a lovely evening, night out.
It was great. And I mean, Ed and I wouldn't say we go to a lot of drag shows.
that would be an understatement from my part.
Speak for yourselves, guys.
But, you know, little bit here and there. I'm not someone who seeks out drag shows either, although I go to Nikki's burlesque shows sometimes, and they'll slip some drag acts into those burlesque shows sometimes.
I think I've been to enough drag shows for all of us, just so you know.
Cornflake is the most frequent drag attendee among the three of us, I think we can safely say. But no, Ed and I got together to go to the show Kinky Boots, you know, which was a big Broadway show, and then there's a touring version of it, and we went to see that because... And it was a great show, for one thing. Great, great show. You know, Cyndi Lauper did the music for it. Fun show. But we were there to see Mikey.
Yeah, Mikey, the longtime guitarist for the Sponge Awareness Foundation and happens to be my brother.
Yeah.
And he's a professional guitarist. He's a professional musician as opposed to me. And is very talented and it was a joy to get to hear him, like, strut his stuff playing 80s style music, which, you know, is very much his genre of choice.
Well, this is a thing he's doing now, is actually, you know, playing professionally with theater productions like this. You know, he was actually down there in the orchestra pit with the band doing all the music. He's on guitar for this production of Kinky Boots, and he was great. What a treat. And when you think how Mikey came up with us, you know, just playing in coffee shops and college dorms, and now he's in this big, beautiful theater and a big professional production. And look at us.
Yeah, look at us now.
Podcasting about Guy Smiley.
Yes. You know, and it was great when we got to see him afterwards and we talked about the show a little bit. And he, you know what his last words to us were, Kevin? You remember?
I think I do, yeah. But why don't you go ahead and share that with us?
Yeah, yeah. Don't you dare talk about this on your darn podcast.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the Tee Public store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.